Good afternoon, or happy 1 o'clock, no, 12 o'clock in the afternoon, midday in Cayman. Welcome to this week's What Comes Next Live. Feeling disgustingly jealous of my good friend, Steve McIntosh, as he sits in his house with the cool breeze and the, let's put it into two languages, low 80s and high 20s Fahrenheit and Celsius temperatures. It's, as we'd say in Scotland, Steve, it's Baltic, yeah. How are you, sir?
The grass is always greener, Tom.
Well, I've not just had 14 days at home with COVID isolation, which you have, right?
True. Yeah, so it's been a good time to have foul weather.
Yeah, okay. Well, anyway, enough talking about the weather. That's a much too British a thing to do for an international audience. How are you doing and what's on your mind these days? If I should say a little bit about us, and you can talk about yourself. I've known Steve for at least 15 years, in Cayman. We originally met through the angel network that was in place in Cayman at the time. That's back before business angels became people who do pre-income fundraisers for tech companies. It was when you actually put money into actual businesses and you help them get going. But then I think Dragon's Den and Shark Tank just kind of killed it off because people just got really scared of walking in the room and giving this idea. And all we were there to do was try to help Caymanian businesses get going, right?
Yeah.
But you're, as long as I've known you, you've always had big ideas. And one of your themes for the, I was working it out, about 17 years since you got into the recruitment and people business, has really been about just helping people systemically through that. So you've had a very successful recruitment company, which you still have, but you're not in it, which is also a really cool thing for owners to step away from their business.
Yeah, I worked myself out of a job.
That's fantastic. And I know I was helping you in small ways do that for years, and eventually you did it, to which congratulations, and congratulations to your staff for stepping up. But you've got some really big, cool things you're working on now, and I'm sure that'd be mostly what you want to talk about. And I'd love to hear a bit about your background and then what you're working on now and what that means.
Yeah, so, I mean, I consider myself an HR guy now, right? But I'm not your average HR guy because I started my career as an accountant. You know, my running joke is that I was young and I needed the money. I fell in with a bad crowd in high school, all that stuff. But I got into HR through recruitment, and I found that I really loved recruitment, and I guess I was okay at it. The company did well, and grew, but my fascination with HR grew over the years. And one thing that we started, so you know that I've been saying for 10 years that HR is the new IT.
Yeah. Right?
And I think, it's great to see that now, partly because of the pandemic, I think HR has really come to the fore. So, you know, reading so much in the press these days about the great resignation, the great reawakening, whatever you want to call it. But it's, I think companies are finally coming around to the idea that people matter and that people are really what's driving your company and its value. And so I was thinking about what to talk about because you gave me such a blank canvas. What comes next? I'm like, what comes next for what? What comes next for the world?
What do you want to talk about, mate?
I know, right? But obviously the first place my mind went to was HR. And I think that if I look at what's happening now in the world, it's such an interesting time to be in HR. Mm-hmm. We've got these kind of, mega trends colliding, if you like, right? One is just the march of technology and the constant change that that's creating. And what it's trite to talk about the impact of technology on the workplace. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's been having that impact for 30 years. But what I think is really interesting about the impact of technology is just that it's making it harder for young people to create value. So technology has been a great boon to productivity, but it's also made it much more difficult it's made work much more autonomous. So young people really have to know what they're solving for now. And I think that's what companies, need to step up and do is to help people figure out what they're solving for and how to create value in their role, because we've never had more autonomy than we have from day to day now. And that's from the moment you arrive in the workplace. When you and I started, I dare say you were the same as me. Your time at PwC was spent putting files together and photocopying and shredding and stuff like that. That stuff's all gone.
Making the team. Let's slow down a minute, because when you and I sit and normally talk in a bar in Cayman or something and solve all of the problems for the world, and particularly the Cayman Islands, we go very fast and I can mostly keep up with your brain. The HR is the new IT, to me, if I go back to that, was, I mean, for the last 5 years, it's been every industry in the world has the word tech appended to it.
Yeah.
Which went a bit far when it became fashion. It's now fash tech. Well, basically, technology is in everything, right? But I think you broadly meant that it was about companies emphasize the importance of IT and will invest.
Exactly.
Whereas HR, human resources, there's now many titles for it, but broadly it's the fact that your business is about your people.
Yeah.
So let's invest in our people. Yeah. Let's give them an opportunity. But the key piece you're now talking about is young people having less opportunity to create value. And the word autonomous felt a bit dissonant following that, because on the one hand, we have a huge amount of autonomy. We just have a smartphone and we can work everything out, right? Yeah. But on the other hand, if we don't have the opportunity to create value because maybe there isn't a structure, isn't a system, we're working from home. You know, I know a very bright young person who just spent their first year after graduating in a high-end graduate placement scheme in the UK without ever going to the office or even seeing the face of one of their colleagues.
Wow.
Because their company doesn't use video, right? So they can provide value within a system as long as they're well supported. But it seems dissonant. On the one hand, we're hugely autonomous. We've got the information of the world in our smartphone.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you're saying we don't have the freedom, the ability to create value for a young person in their early stages of their career is constrained. So say a bit more about that.
Yeah. So if you think about when we started our careers, we had the benefit of being, our careers were on rails, right? We were big four accountants and really all we had to do was follow the process.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you started off as a trainee and then you became a senior accountant, then you became a manager and so on. And that was a well-defined career track. But that's not the expectation anymore. So the autonomy is kind of a double-edged sword. So you've got, it's great that the world is your oyster, but it's harder to figure out where your place in the world is. That's the problem. And the example that you gave of someone starting their job and working from home and never seeing a colleague, that's a great demonstration.
Mm-hmm.
That young man, I'm assuming it was, he had all the autonomy in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But what do you do with it? You know, when you're not on a call, you have to figure out from one day to the next how you add value in this job. And that's not always clear. And it's why so many people, I think, are frustrated in their roles today, especially young people. There was a book a few years ago by an academic by the name of David Graeber. I don't want to swear on the podcast, but you know, am I allowed to swear, Tom? If I'm citing the name of a book. The book
was called Billy Connolly's our favorite comedian. You can do what you like.
The book was called Bullshit Jobs, right?
That's not even swearing.
It's not
too American.
But the reason I think, and I kind of disagreed with the premise of the book, because what he said is that most people have these bullshit jobs that are pointless.
Mm-hmm.
The problem isn't that the job is pointless. The problem is that the person in the job doesn't understand how it creates value. And the reason they don't understand it is that the company didn't take the time to explain it to them. They just sat them down.
Pausing for a minute, because this may lead into the business you're in, is thinking of there's another huge area of inequality or inequity, I think is more accurate. Inequity is more accurate. Around this situation of having to be autonomous to find out where do you create value? What problem am I solving for? How can I add more value? Is your upbringing and support network? If you come from a socioeconomic group where you've lived up a level or two, you've gone 20 plus years with nobody around you. So if you go into a grad placement scheme in a high-end investment bank, yeah, right, and nobody in your family has ever worked in investment banking or finance, yeah, and you've lived a solid life, but you've never had capital to invest, you don't understand personal finance, you don't know how to invest, right?
Yeah.
It's, you don't have a support network who you can go to. This is a really nice lead-in for you to, for mentoring or coaching or advice on, yep, well, explain to me, you know, when you did it, how did you do this? What does it look like? So the gap is getting wider, it would seem.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. The studies show that 85% of young people don't have someone that they consider a mentor, mm-hmm, at work. And that was me. And really, I mean, how I did it was I made lots of mistakes. Mm-hmm. Right. That's, I think that's how most people do it. And so the, my new venture Career Point is all about helping young people figure this out, helping them navigate the world of work, helping them figure out how to add value, coaching them on why value is what's really driving their career and helping them become successful so that their companies can become more successful. And what we do really, the premise of this is that career advancement is a skill, and it's a skill that can be taught and a skill that can be learned, but it's not one that most people have instinctively. So you have to acquire this skill from somewhere. Where do you acquire it from? And as you said, if you're born into certain circumstances, you'll acquire it from your parents. You'll acquire it from your friends. If you go to the right school or the right university, you can acquire it there. But for lots of people, they're not lucky enough to be born into those circumstances. So where do they acquire it from? And that's why part of our mission at Career Point is to level the playing field for historically disadvantaged groups, mm-hmm, to help people acquire this skill when they have no other place to acquire it from.
Mm-hmm. So you've just completed a major investment in yourself. It also keeps your brain going, which was doing an executive MBA with loads of flying transatlantic to Oxford University. And so tell me a bit about how this career, because you, as you know, as we've talked about, you've been having ideas around improvement in for HR for people for many years, and yeah, various ones you've had a go at, but this one has now got a hell of a lot of traction. So tell us how it came about, what it's, and then tell us more about it and what makes it stand out.
Yeah. So, I mean, I started what I call career advancement coaching almost 10 years ago, mm-hmm, as a passion project here in the Cayman Islands. And the premise for it was my own experience with, a lot of my thinking about career advancement comes from my experience, not just of climbing the greasy pole myself at KPMG, but also my experience as a boss, mm-hmm, having employed hundreds of people over the course of the 17 years I spent at the helm of CML and recruitment. And what I saw during that time was what worked and what didn't work, and who advanced and who did not. And what I realized was that the difference between people who were successful and people who weren't wasn't necessarily how hard they worked or how smart they were. It was just how well they understood how to play the game. And when I had this experience that you've heard about many times of a young chap who I worked with who felt passed over for advancement and resigned in indignation over this, what I learned from speaking to friends and colleagues was that this is, and clients here in the Cayman Islands, was that this is every company. Every company has this struggle. They have young people who are frustrated about their advancement. They don't really understand how it works. They don't know how to initiate the conversation, and the companies aren't good at having the conversation. And so at the time when I decided to do something about it, so I put together a series of workshops that we called Career Advancement 101, if you like, and started talking to people about how to advance in their careers. And the feedback that we got was that it was life changing for people, that they, that they had this moment of clarity that they'd never had. And so when I started the MBA program in Oxford, it really opened my eyes to a broader world. It's impossible to spend time in Oxford and not be inspired, right? By the amazing people that you're, that all of the amazing classmates that you have. You have these 70 people from all around the world who are all working on fascinating projects. And it really just makes you think big. And I knew I wanted to do something new and I wanted to make it scalable. I wanted to have a positive impact on the world. And I really took the part of my job that I loved the most and decided to go big. Mm-hmm. So I teamed up with a few of my classmates, and we decided to start this venture.
So entrepreneurs are people, and we both are, but we're people who see gaps and take them. And in this case, you're going bigger with it. What's the gap that you saw, and it may have evolved, but what's the gap that CareerPoint fills?
I think there's two. So on the one hand, most people don't instinctively know how to advance in their career, and it's something they need help with. Mm-hmm. And this really, you know, think of what CareerPoint does as the executive coaching that you've been doing for years, but for everyone else, mm-hmm. right? And when you think about the amount of time that people spend at work, mm-hmm. it's crazy that they don't have a coach. So
I'm not going to disagree.
I mean, if you started to play golf, the first thing you would do would be get a coach, mm-hmm. right? It's, you know, and golf is something that you maybe do once a week. Work is something that you do every day, and career advancement matters, especially to millennials and Gen Z. It matters more than almost anything else at work. It's the 87% of millennials and Gen Z say that career advancement and a job opportunity is very important to them. Of course it is, because it's their entire life. They're looking ahead and they're thinking, I want to do all these things, and I want autonomy, and I want financial security. And all of it requires career advancement, but there's no playbook. So mm-hmm. we wanted to create that playbook. On the employer side, career advancement is all about helping people become successful and add value, because that's what's driving the success of your company, right? It's a truism to say that the most valuable asset you have is your people. Yeah. But most companies don't invest in their people as if that were true. And mm-hmm. it's probably because they're not actually a line item on the balance sheet that anyone's job is to optimize, right? That's not really how most HR departments think. But to me, that's how we should look at HR. We should look at people as an investment to be optimized, not just for the company's benefit, but for their own benefit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. I could dive into all of those, but before we do that, to create a frame, I mean, the sort of stuff I do is simply not accessible for two reasons. One is because it's person to person, so it's not automated. And the other one is it's expensive. It really is only for it's not for every member of staff.
Yep.
So there are, at the one end of the spectrum, there are sort of robo coaches, right?
Yeah.
So there's, you know, automation of that. And that's not the end that you're at. But if I understand it right, correctly, what you're doing is you're bringing person-to-person coaching. And you've used the word career development, speaker training about 15 times, right? And it has been my experience in building mentoring networks, pro bono mentoring networks over the years, is if you catch people from post-university to about early to mid-30s, the yeah. only thing they're thinking about is, how do I move up the ladder? Yeah. And socioeconomically, it's absolutely key, because in all the developed world, including Cayman, including London, various where you and I both live currently, it's almost impossible to get on the housing ladder, right?
Yeah.
So you can't build a life for yourself, and you're 10 years younger than me, but even then, it was easier to build a life for yourself, when you graduated uni 25 years ago. So it's absolutely the focus. The thing is, it's a bit like, I'm veering off for a minute. It's a bit like how you merchandise a supermarket, right? Mm-hmm. You put the price, you know, you focus on the price of the inexpensive items that are staples, but what they really need and want is other stuff, right? So what people, I mean, for me, one of the big holdbacks to career development is confidence, mm-hmm. which is an outcome of absolutely. Knowing you have the skills and you've had a mentor or a coach, but understand your attributes, point them out to you, reflect them to you, and say, this is how you can deploy them. And then the self-belief is all of this. But if you talk to somebody who's 25 to 30 and say, would you pay for or get your company to give you budget for somebody who can help you with that? The answer is going to be no. But can you introduce me to somebody who can get me a better paid job? You go, perhaps I could, but what's to say that you're going to be able to make that upwards and sideways leap? or diagonal leap, because you don't have the skills. So, career point is about making person-to-person coaching accessible. And, and then the bridge, I guess, is that the company pays for it generally, I would imagine. So how does it work basically?
Yeah. So we train and certify experienced leaders to be career advancement coaches. And I think that's the, some people might wonder why the boss, can't coach the young people in the organization. And I think, you know, a great boss can be a coach. Mm-hmm. It's not impossible, but most bosses aren't trained to be coaches.
Correct.
And they're not impartial, which makes it very, very difficult to coach someone. It's very difficult for a young employee to open up to their boss and talk about the things that they're not good at and that they're not confident in, but that's really where they most need the coaching.
Yeah.
So CareerPoint trains experienced leaders who want to give back and want to work with millennials and Gen Z talent to help them figure this out. So they're experienced, they're impartial, they're trained in coaching, they're trained in our framework. And what we've really figured out how to do is to make the coaching process super efficient. So it all takes place online, obviously. It's virtual over Zoom. It can be done at any time of the day. And it's designed to be super accessible and just easy to do for both sides. So, you know, it's easy for the coach. It's easy for the employee who wants to be coached. And the typical coaching program is short. Mm-hmm. It's not something that goes on indefinitely, although many people want it to continue and they obviously have that option. But our basic coaching program is only 4 sessions.
Okay.
And that allows us to keep the price down. Mm-hmm. So the typical coaching program really is equivalent to a couple of days off sick. That's in terms of the cost for the employer.
Interesting way of framing it, right?
It's a rounding error. We don't really need to move the dial very much mm-hmm. on the value that's created by the employee for there to be a positive ROI on this coaching.
One thought from talking to you about this a little while ago, I think when I saw you in Cayman in September, was, you know, that it's cool to see that a number of the leaders that you brought in to certify as CareerPoint coaches with your framework and some coach training, there's a heavy emphasis on giving back. So you pay your coaches, but relative to what they normally earn for their time, that's not why they're doing it.
No,
people like to be rewarded, but the reward is in the relationship. What sort of companies, I mean, I'm helping you do a sales pitch here, and not hypothetically, some of the people who listen to this podcast are your market, but what sort of companies, you know, size of companies, type of companies are you looking for? I mean, what makes for a potential CareerPoint client company?
Yeah, well, I can tell you so far the hotspots, for whatever reason, have been energy, tech, financial services, and professional services. That's the bulk of the clients we have so far. About 70% of them are public companies, but actually it's very important to me. I would love to have more small and medium-sized companies signing up to have their employees coached, because they're often the ones who need it the most and who don't have the internal learning and development resources that can enable their employees to thrive. Mm-hmm. So we want it to be accessible to everyone, and that's kind of built in, if you like. It's just much more difficult to efficiently market to smaller companies. So it's not that we're excluding them. It's just that, right. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's like, I mean, I've mentored quite a number of startups and scale-ups, and they'll often start, it feels sexy to have a B2C model where, like, for example, you know, renting workspace units, because one of the ideas now is, rather than take out a membership for a WeWork, you just get, you know, a number of days you can use per month.
Yeah.
And I go, if you need to move several thousand of those a month just to get going, that's several thousand people you need to market to. If you turn around to a few companies and go, why don't you add to your benefits menu, buy hundreds of days and add to your benefits menu for your staff, they can have up to so many days. Because a lot of people, it simply isn't suitable to work from home, right?
Yep.
Both behaviorally or just space or young kids or whatever. So, yeah. You know, getting that pivot to B2B helps it scale. But given you've got an online model and you've got the coaches and obviously there's an onboarding element to every new client. But if a client has say 5 or 10 staff that they want to put through this, would that be viable?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. And if they have 1,000 staff that want to put through this, you'd be biting their hand off, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay.
Bring it on, careerpoint.com.
Yeah, I'm yeah, so the, correct. I think so that's yeah. careerpoint.com. So yeah, I mean, I just my own views on this little bit, two things that you just mentioned about, you know, and it doesn't have to be their boss, it could be somebody else in the company. And I have been part of large professional service firms as clients who have wanted to bring coaching in. Mm-hmm. And it is quite remarkable, but not unexpected to note that people do not get trained in coaching skills.
Bosses, you mean managers?
Any time through their career, but you could have professional service firms, you'd have country managing partners.
Yeah.
Right. Top people in the company, and that the normal expectation is if you're going to develop somebody, it needs to be somebody more senior to them in the hierarchy.
Yeah.
And with one of my past clients who works in effectively professional services, you know, people knowledge workers selling their time in different forms, which is a really large part of the economy now. It's not just the accounting firms and law firms and people like that. But they saw this years ago, a very strategic HR leader, they saw this years ago, and they said, can you build a coaching skills program for them, which we built and delivered around the world? And the number one thing I want them to understand, it was a one-day program for the very senior leaders. The number thing I want to understand is that coaching is not telling people what to do.
Why it's very difficult for bosses to coach, right?
Yes.
Because it's kind of like, do you want guidance or do you want coaching? Because it can't really be both. And when you're having these coaching conversations and you're trying to help people figure it out for themselves, that's not always helpful for a manager or a boss. So you're kind of sending mixed signals.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, one of the things we do, and I've told you about this on previous conversations, is that we teach them the technical differences between coaching, mentoring, training, and consulting, and then they literally don different hats, almost like De Bono's thinking hats, but they don different hats depending on my role here is to coach you. If after a period of time you get stuck and you just want me to tell you what I would do, I can do that, and my primary role is that. So. There is that, and the one thing you can never get away from, and you can only partially get away from it by moving that coaching relationship laterally within the company, is to, you know, it's tough to get away from it if somebody's not independent of the company. And obviously that's one of the things I do. But one of the things that is interesting is things like moving around the hierarchy, right? And this is moving away from CareerPoint, it's just a few thoughts, is that sometimes you can be a great coach and you can be 20 years younger than somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Sometimes you can, you'll be familiar with this concept of reverse mentoring. And my friend Chip Connolly, who's been a guest on the show, talks about third age and modern elder and actually how he was a mentor to Brian Chesky at Airbnb. So he was a intern publicly. So he was learning about tech and how to put apps on his phone from all these kiddos at Airbnb. But he would mentor privately. Right. So he'd have a 20-something CEO, which was Brian's age when he started Airbnb. And Chip was his head of hospitality. But fundamentally, he was a mentor giving advice. But actually, to be honest, and I've talked to him about this, and his language is different, but I thought mostly what he was doing was coaching. He was just listening, right? And to be a sage old head.
And think how important that is for young people, right? To have someone who actually listens to them talk about themselves for an extended period, because a lot of people just don't have it.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, because we're both accountants, we probably had the same experience early on in our careers where we were coming home and trying to, you know, no one wants to hear about your job when you're an accountant. There's nothing interesting to talk about, right? So you're not going to get that kind of support at home. And that's not just accounting. That's almost anything these days. There's no one that you can just talk to and challenge you.
You're right. And I mean, you said something which really hit me is you said, I never had a coach or mentor early in my career. And I went, yeah, I never did too. The first conscious mentor I had was when I started in the coaching industry and people were leaping forwards going, I'll help you. And I was in my 40s.
Yeah, right.
I was in my 40s at that point. Yeah. I'm in mid 50s now. So it, you know, it never occurred to me. And one of the huge hurdles that I see with mentoring is amazing when people get it. All right. Coaching is even more amazing because it's completely unconditional. Right.
Yeah.
It's just, there's somebody who's absolutely there for you and that's what they're there for. But I think it's just, it's such a education process. And that's why what's fascinating for me though is that, you know, in my role, I get a combination of people individually coming to me, which is always through referral, saying, I'm looking for a coach. I'm told you were great, blah, blah, blah. But what I often get more and more these days, because I often work with corporate leaders, is somebody is the company knows me and they know what I can do. And I'm not part of a pool or a bid. I mean, it's individual. But they'll have somebody that they know is right for me and they'll sell them on the idea. And I start to explain to them, so, okay, how are you going to pitch this to the person? Because they have to understand that this is an investment in them. This is something the company is doing. And they have a role in it. They have to step up to it. So I'm sure part of what you do is educate that. So, I mean, I kind of, you know, you come on and obviously you can talk about anything, but I did really selfishly want to talk to you a bit, get you to get an audience for your career point, thing. And I'm really hot. People sometimes often approach me to come on these weekly conversations and I can smell somebody who's pitching for the sake of their business a mile off. So it's a bit different. I've known you forever and you know, you framed it and it's absolutely accurate. You're doing all this for all the right reasons and it's a business. But what comes first is I see what you have is something that is really beneficial and fills a gap. So I was very happy to have half an hour to,
thanks, Tom.
Talk about career point, basically. And maybe I'll get you back on in a few months time and we can talk about how we can solve the bigger problems of the world of work.
Anytime.
So probably rather than get into something else, because that would involve probably going on for hours about broader things around the world of work or solving the problems for life, probably better for me just to say thanks a lot, Steve, and remind us what the website is, and then I'd like to give my guest the final closing word of wisdom for the audience.
Well, thank you very much. So it's careerpoint.com. But anyone can reach out to me that's interested to talk about it. I mean, the best way to learn about it is just to have a conversation. Mm-hmm. My email address is steve@careerpoint.com. We have a fantastic team of people. We have 65 coaches all around the world. They're eager to work with young people. We're always looking for more coaches. So if anyone is an experienced leader and ready to give something back, then we'd encourage you to apply for our coach training. Next cohort is starting in January. It's been a pleasure, Tom. I always enjoy catching up with you. And
that's the detailed pitch, which is all very valuable. Now, you know, what beyond Career Point, what words of wisdom can you give to the audience today?
Any particular topic?
Anything you like, but anything you like, Paul.
Wow, I don't know. I mean, as business leaders, I mean, I guess it's, I don't know. I'm stuck for words, Tom. I don't feel in a position to impart wisdom.
Well, I think what is unsaid is valuable because normally you're never stuck for words, but it also is an insight into the life of a startup founder because it tends to become fairly single track for a period of time. So, I know you're flat out with this and, all the best with it. I look forward to catching up with you when I'm back in Cayman in a couple of months.
Great stuff. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Take care.